Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
What's good, internet? It is September 11th, 2017, and you are listening to Waypoint Radio, coming to you live from Lobby 1, Monday morning.
Yeah.
Hype, I got my hype woman, Danielle Riendo, here. Whoa,
yeah,
I'm a little loud.
That's right.
Joel's blowing me out. Trying to make me sound like a morning. I'm like on the Breakfast Club now. Shit.
He's your real hype man.
He apparently.
Right, he's turning you away.
It is again, September 11th, 2017. Joining me in the studio, Danielle Riendo.
Hi, how you doing?
On the microphones in Chicago, Patrick Klepek. That is what Twitter is and sounds like right now. Also from Boston, Rob Zachney.
How about them Bears, Patrick?
Okay. Mm-hmm. Welcome to the discourse zone.
Oh.
We're just going to jump right into it today.
Let's do
How's everybody's Twitter experience over the weekend?
Yeah.
Has it been good?
Good shit.
It's Austin. Yeah.
That was Danica tweeted, "We're live with Waypoint Radio. Let's talk about PewDiePie using the N-word." And there are three responses right now. It's two people saying, "Erg," and then Steve Gaynor from Fulbright Studios saying, "I liked the first half of this tweet."
And he was keeping it posy.
He was keeping it posy.
You know, it's Monday. We're all trying here.
Shout out to Steve Gaynor. We should talk about, I think this is like the conversation that's in the space of gaming right now. Over the weekend, while playing everyone's favorite game of the year, Plunk Bat, PUBG,
Plunk Batter.
PUBG,
yeah.
PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, YouTuber, most successful, most popular YouTube content creator on the planet.
57 million subscribers.
57 million subscribers, PewDiePie, a.k.a. or real name, Felix...
Kelberg, I think. Something like that.
I believe
Kelberg,
that's right.
But there's a J at the beginning of it, and I don't know
I
if I should pronounce that. Probably a silent J.
Maybe.
Was shooting at a dude on a bridge, and then he said, I'm trying to remember the exact phrasing of it. I want to get it exactly right. I have a tweet where I quote it, so that's going to make it easy. What he says is, "What a fucking nigger," as the guy like hides behind a Jeep. And then he says like, he's like, makes a noise as if to say, I said that out loud in front of millions of people. I have a huge audience. People are going to hear me. But what he says is like, what a fucking asshole. He corrects himself.
Right before that, he says, I'm sorry, but what the fuck?
And then
there's a pause. And then as if to replace the word that he just used, he inserts the phrase, "What a fucking asshole," as though that is the public socially acceptable equivalent of what he is also trying to say.
Yep. It is for me one of these things where there's so many conversations to have around this moment because it dials into a bunch of things. Because I guess we should there is one more event I'd say in this ongoing saga, which is soon after that. There's lots of coverage about it over on social media channels and here or there on news outlets. And then Sean Vanneman at Campo Santo made a series of tweets. Saying that Campo Santo would be using a DMCA to take down videos that PewDiePie put up using Firewatch or that had Firewatch
and upcoming games.
And upcoming games from Campo Santo. Yep.
And he had put a video, PewDiePie's video had, I believe, before the takedown took effect, which it did, 5.7 million views.
Right. Also, briefly, disclosure, which is that, Danielle and Rob both are on Idle Thumbs shows.
I've
previously been on. You've been on Idle Thumbs with Sean.
Yes.
You currently host Idle Weekend, which is connected through
it's in the Idle Thumbs network.
That Vanneman's friends at Campo Santo, co-workers at Campo Santo run. So full disclosure on that part of the story. But so I think that there's the DMCA angle. I think there is the toxicity in games culture and in streaming culture and in YouTube culture angle. There is the larger conversation that we're having right now around what people are kind of love to call political correctness, and I think shouting nigger, if you defend that, if you defend getting upset at someone shouting nigger in a trade-in for asshole, maybe the you've reached the ends of the limit of the political correctness argument.
And also a white guy. And also a white guy, which should probably be a part of that,
pretty key
imagine,
part.
But yeah.
And then there's also just like the general, there's the toxicity inside of PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, because one of the common defenses here is if you turn on the voice channel, you hear it all the time from everybody, which is a hell of a thing. Patrick, you're in the middle of writing about this. I am curious what your initial take is here.
Well, it's not hard to have. I mean, I was in the middle of seething after watching, as Rob alluded to, the Chicago Bears lose yet another shitty football game.
Sure.
And saw this, and I guess in some ways was not surprised. I think sort of like the normalization of that word is something we're all pretty familiar with. Mm-hmm. I think what we usually expect, though, is public figures to take, you know, into account that you are not those people. Like, you are setting, even if you don't want to be sort of a sort of standard bearer for like young people around the world, like,
right,
that's just not a thing you do. And like, that's like that is something that is above you. And the you know, I think the response that you and I both had talking about it on Twitter was that when someone so casually says that in a quote heated moment, yeah, as some quote shitlords on the internet have described it,
that is a quote. That is a quote. Shitlords is actually a quote about,
yeah. Yeah. If that's a word that so casually comes out of your mouth, it says something about you. I mean, I think, right, I would draw a distinction between saying something racist and being a racist. I think that stuff kind of does exist on a spectrum. I don't know PewDiePie. I don't know his internal beliefs. But what I do know, sure, is what he says. And I do know that when that casually comes out as a word that just you might say when you're angry,
right,
speaks something to the normalization of a word for you and speaks,
right,
to...
And, the ways in which it does not carry the same meaning for you that it does for the people that
yes,
are caught up in its history and are caught up in the trauma that it emerges from, and that for you that is not a priority. That I don't know. I get angry all the time when I'm playing games. There are things I don't say, and there are things I used to say. Also, there are things that I used to say. Like, I fucked up for a long time. I was a teenager in America. I said a bunch of shit that I learned not to say.
For too long, I, you know, used, you know, the F word, the, you know, the homosexual,
sure,
slur. That was growing up, completely normal. It was alongside the word stupid and dumb and asshole,
right,
and the F word was just, I thought nothing of it until college, until moving to San Francisco. Like, along that path, I became more aware of, I'd say in college, it became, you didn't say that in public, but around, like, your close friends who, like, they know that you don't hate
you
gay
don't
people.
Actually, right.
You don't mean this in a bad way. You're just saying it because, like, we're bros. Like, that was a word that I still used. And, like, moving to San Francisco changed my worldview in all sorts of ways. Reading things changed my worldview in all sorts of ways. But, like, I think we all have words that we look back on in a context that we're probably, or at least hopefully, are deeply shameful of how we use them and how, you know, as, like, in my personal context, like, would hear later from friends that then turned out to be gay. We're like,
yeah,
yo, like, that hurt me every time you said that, but I didn't say anything for X, Y, Z good reasons because they didn't want to be the awkward one out. And I look back on that with deep shame, but also it was a form of ignorance, but like self-reflection, learning, like realizing that was bad, like that's all part of the process, not to mention the performative aspect of being someone with 57 million followers that also, also the N-word is not excusable,
right,
in 2017.
It's that platform that gets under my skin.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
Danielle,
I was thinking myself, I certainly used a lot of horrible language, and I even use a lot of horrible language against, like, people like myself. Mm. Like, I can say dyke because,
right,
I'm a,
right,
queer woman,
sure,
but, like, I would say that word in a derogatory way before I even knew I was queer.
Right.
And, like, now I look back and I'm like,
well, fuck.
Well, you know, like,
I done goofed
okay,
it.
You know?
Yeah. It's
so, I done goofed it, exactly.
There's the episode title.
I done goofed it. We didn't. It wasn't us this time.
Yeah,
well,
right.
And, well, and there's actually a huge distinction, though, because as people in the chat are already pointing out, like, there is a just a gorge between 17-year-old who comes up in a culture that is homophobic, that is racist, that is misogynistic, using slurs that are all over culture already, that are not taught to be a thing that you should silence yourself about or that you should find other words for. Like, there was a real problem coming up with, like, what are some synonyms for bad that aren't just degrading other people?
Right.
That isn't the thing that we get taught. We don't get taught how to convert our gut emotional reaction into something that is, like, critical and specific. But then there's a huge gap between that person and PewDiePie, who has been down this fucking road before.
Many a
time. I've spent the last 5 years going so far back and forth on that dude. Like, from when it was like, oh, he shouts rape nonstop and does, like, parody songs about rape on his channel and, like, does, like, he's a shock jock of YouTube culture. To, like, okay, there was this brief window. There was this, like, 4-month window, like, 2 years ago, where he'd apologized for his past behavior on his channel, where, you know, he had kind of started to position himself separate from a lot of kind of YouTube culture and, like, was responsive to it in a way that seemed there was almost an elder statesman quality to him. He's like, sure. I've been through the fucking ringer. I know how this stuff goes. I'm going to try to step above it and, like, be a leader in this space.
I mean, specifically, like, he was constantly criticized for rape jokes that would come up in a lot of his videos. And, like, PewDiePie, like, essentially grew up on YouTube in a lot of ways, like, rode that wave. And so you could... at the time, there was the hope that was like, oh, here's this arc of maturity that we're... It was an interesting social experiment. Was like this: we're watching sort of like a child actor sort of thing, but in a different context. Was like, oh, like this is what happens when someone accrues power, realizes that they've got to start using it a little more responsibly. Like that was the hope of a lot of this. Was like, oh, PewDiePie can act as, to counter to the normalization of certain words and certain shock humor to show that you can be successful and be above it because folks like himself in a position of influence contribute to the normalization of those words, those phrases, and that culture if they engage with it themselves and don't denounce it.
Right. And then it turns out this year has not been a good one for PewDiePie in terms of this stuff. I'm sure it's been a good one in terms of, I don't know, he lost his Disney deal, right? So
yeah.
I'm sure his income has shifted to some degree. But back in February, he made a video in which he went on Fiverr and paid two people to hold up a sign that said death to the Jews or death to all Jews. Yep. There's an important distinction there, but one or the other.
It was pretty bad. Yeah.
It was covered by the Wall Street Journal. In response to that, Disney and YouTube distanced themselves. He kind of lost his YouTube Red, which was a kind of subscription-based model on YouTube. I think Disney stopped his show that they'd been doing with him.
The first episode was like set to launch like a week or two later, they just canned the whole season. And as far as I know, I think he threatened to release it,
and disclosure here too. We have a show on real television with Disney, Disney XD. So that is an important disclosure to this weird story now too.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we're just in this place where he's still a person who has 57 million viewers, 57 million subscribers, on top of the people who will just click through and find his links because he gets so watched, they'll lift up to the top of YouTube search for SEO reasons, right? It is really interesting to have to hit this because if this was Conan O'Brien, if this was Stephen Colbert, if this was if Jimmy Fallon had been like done a skit in which he said nigger, we would all be like, yo, Jimmy, no. And there would be a big backlash against it. I would suspect sponsors would pull out, blah, 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 blah. But because it's in this zone of new media, of streamer, instead the conversation has been so much about free speech and has been about like all of this supposed gray area around what he's done. And it's a really tough thing for me because I do my best to go through life compassionately and open-heartedly and believe that when people say something shitty, not even him in this case, but his defenders, his many defenders, that they're speaking from a place of either ignorance or of good faith, that when they make a defense, there is some deep down ideology that's wrong, but
doesn't come from a bad place, basically.
Or it might come from a bad ideology, but it informs their decision. Their decision isn't made in bad faith. Their defense isn't just like, I don't give a fuck what other people think. I just happen to believe this other set of beliefs that allows what he did, his bad thing, to be an acceptable act. But there's the responses to this have been so, like, empty and so meaningless and so just, like, it's just shielding somebody instead of engaging with what happened in any real way. Rob, was that a, you have, like, thoughts about bad people on
Twitter? No, that was me having allergies and, like, needing to clear my throat.
Are you allergic to shitty defenses of PewDiePie? Like, angry?
So, like, I've been in hives all morning. No, it's, I guess.
PewDiePie. Yeah.
Thank you, PewDiePie. Good.
Great. You know, I could have made a Destiny joke, too.
Yeah, I guess part of it is that it's getting really depressing and familiar to me how often that the tip of the iceberg, there's always just, it always is the tip of the iceberg. It's never just the one thing that the person says that's, you know, taken out of context or they didn't really mean or they're clearly just kidding. It's like inevitably that rock will eventually turn over and you'll discover that they check a bunch of the ism boxes. Like, that's the thing is, like, this coming out is like, what, he's on his third chance now?
Right, this is not a milkshake duck, right?
Yeah, the defenses haven't evolved.
Right. In fact, they've only been pushed further and further into nonsense, right? Like, when this stuff first happened, when people were on his case for making shitty rape jokes, it was like, oh, well, he's very young. And, like, you know what? He's young. He did get tossed into this. He's coming from, like, a group of friends who maybe didn't know any better. He apologizes. Okay. Then it's like the Fiverr thing with the anti-Semitic video that he produced. That was like, okay, like, well, now the defense is this is satire.
Satire, yeah.
This is comedy. This is okay. Well, now the defense is, oh, he only said nigger because he was angry. And like, yo, that is not a defense. That is not that's the association.
The one that I've gotten is a lot of, oh, it's just a word, which is like, no. I mean, yes, but no.
The one that I've gotten is, I say it all the time.
Yeah.
And like, yeah? Like, you're just, okay, you played yourself. Like, you came out here, and if your defense is, I do it too, then all you're doing is saying, you're telling me you need to be more critical about your own life and your own practices. And that's hard. It is hard if you are 17 and you've, like, never had to actually confront what racism is and what it feels like and what it materially does in terms of having access to wealth, having access to opportunity. Like, it is not just a word. It is just a word when all you see is people getting upset about the word. And maybe that's a failure in coverage because it seems to be the case that, you know, the things that blow up into these social spheres are a popular person says nigger and not necessarily here is the history of redlining in America that's prevented black families from gathering wealth the way white families have, even when they've had decent income jobs. They're not able to have mortgages in the same way. They're not able to secure bank loans in the same way. The GI Bill didn't apply in an equal way. Like, those things are the material side of racism that are supported by this superstructure of words and degradation and a history of which it sets up nigger and black people in general and marginalized people broadly as being less than white cishet dudes. Like, and that shit. It feels like the tip of it feels like it's nothing, but it is a tip of a much larger iceberg. And maybe that's even an incorrect analogy because it isn't just the tip. It's also the cold water around the iceberg that lets it stay frozen.
But I think these words are always reflective of a worldview. Like, where I part ways with you is that you seem to be taking the angle that the people who say these things don't understand, they don't fully grasp the context, they don't understand the significance of the language they're playing around with. And I think that's true, but they also don't care. It's reflective of a worldview that is you are in the in-groups, in which case you matter.
Right.
Or we need to find, and this is the other thing, our identity is founded, and it is critical that we find people that are in the out-group that are for no good reason less than us. And that is what we share in common, is that we can say this about these groups we've never met. We don't know the history because who gives a shit? The point is that we're not in those groups. It isn't that funny. It isn't right. That great. And that's what kind of bugs me about this is this idea that someone like this is being naive about their about their racism, their bigotry. They're being ignorant, but they're not being naive.
And
they're being very purposeful.
This is where I'm at the limits of my traditional feeling of like, oh, I'm going to take people at their word, mm-hmm. which means that they can be wrong, and I can call them out on being wrong, but I'm going to believe that they're making an argument from an honest position, even when it's a foolish argument. I'm at the limits of believing that. Like, the notion that, like, oh, he's European and doesn't know as well. Like, I know lots of Europeans who not only say, like, oh, yeah, no, this is totally a thing here. We understand this. We're taught this. It's you know, he has access to education in the same way that I did, and I was taught not to do that. He also just lives online. He just lives in the world. He lives in the world that has been the world of the last few years. He's lived in the world that has had an Obama presidency, which has been an international event because he was the first black president of America. Like, in the same way that you know, there are international stories that can help bring that story across. Like, he's, you know, he should probably know who Nelson Mandela is. Like, racism has not only been a North American thing. So I'm with you here, Rob, which is that, like, I'm at the limits of where I can't know their hearts, but there is enough inconsistency in the defense, enough reaching, enough grasping for something that I still can't say you know, again, what is in your heart of hearts. But I can say that the practice of this ongoing defense, the practice of using nigger as a slur that is meant to deride someone, comes from a place of knowledge. If you are this dude who is in his mid to late 20s at this point, who has access to education, who has been chided for his bullshit before, like and if it isn't coming from hate, it's coming from negligence. And I've used the metaphor before, but like, if you are falling asleep at the wheel and keep driving, I don't give a like. Yes, there is a big difference between the person who falls asleep at the wheel and the person who actively tries to crash their car into somebody. There's an important difference. Both of those result in people being hurt, and there, it is important for us to call out both the negligent and also the willfully malevolent, the willfully the premeditated. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, because I actually heard, I don't know if this will end up in the final version of the piece that I'm working on, but I heard from, after our tweets we put out last night, I heard from this kid who's probably roughly same age as PewDiePie, like mid-20s sort of thing, and he lives in Denmark, not too far from Sweden, like all things told,
mm-hmm.
And just straight up admitted that he has used the word, like, on a regular basis in the very same construct of,
right.
Like, playing video games in both like friendly group and like non-friendly group settings, and he like explicitly started it out with like, I think what PewDiePie did is wrong. I think what I do is wrong. Yeah. This isn't a defense of my actions. I'm just explaining the context of my actions, and walked through a lot of the stuff that we're talking about. It's like, oh well, in Denmark, like we don't actually culturally have a historical understanding of slavery and the repercussions of like black oppression over decades. Like, intellectually, yes, like a lot of people know that, it's impossible not to know that, but you're not reminded of it on a day-to-day sure. basis in the same way you are in the US. And I pushed back and said, well, that's not really an excuse, that's just a justification for right. like allowing your bad behavior. And he's like, that's correct. And I was like, okay, well, I would hope your takeaway from this exchange,
right,
which he agreed to allow me to share and quote again, I don't know if I end up in my piece, but like he wanted to do, his thought was like, PewDiePie won't say what I'm just going to say, which is that like, there is no cultural pressure to not use this word. If you use this word, it is in the same category as...
The thing is that we've also heard, this is the thing that's difficult, is I've also heard from other people in Scandinavian countries who say, no, we are absolutely taught not to do that. And like, I don't have direct access.
And there's a tremendous right. alt-right or far-right presence
absolutely.
There, and there's massive anti-immigrant sentiment,
absolutely.
Which really, it speaks on the same level to the same
right,
things.
Right.
So
like,
it's kind
of... If you look at a lot of the rhetoric around the anti-immigration stance throughout Europe
it's
right now...
It's a lot of just racist... Rhetoric,
some of which has borrowed from American racist
literally,
rhetoric,
yeah.
right? Like, it is a known thing that in Germany, because you can't use Nazi iconography, there are neo-Nazi groups in Germany that just use KKK iconography instead
yeah.
because it gestures towards the same underlying white supremacist ideology. Briefly, just on the negligent point, I just want to put a pin on that, which is that there is a point at which ongoing negligence does become
malfeasance, yeah.
or there should be there is a responsibility, and this isn't a legal thing. This is a personal moral judgment thing at this point. Yeah. I'm not saying like throw him to jail for saying nigger. Like, no, what I'm saying is like there's a point at which you have to you need to make it a priority to address the ongoing negligence that you've had. There, you have to make it a point to address whatever it is. Maybe it's a lack of enculturation that helps put that pressure on you. Find ways to put that pressure on you, right? Like, go out and meet people in communities that you would otherwise think of as less than you. Like, make the effort to understand a different perspective if that's what you need to do to not use slurs, right? Like, it's a deeply frustrating it's a deeply frustrating thing because it is also just all around us. It is also the dozens and dozens or hundreds of people who've messaged us at this point to say like, oh, but I say that when I'm angry in a game, but I don't mean anything by it. I love black people. We're going to have to talk about your definition of love, actually.
Yeah.
So,
God.
This idea that, well, that's just how things are online. That's just the culture we've got there. The thing I don't think people are cognizant enough of, or they don't own enough, is that, yeah, maybe some people are just talking shit to, like, fit in online. But the people who've, like, popularized a lot of those words in online spaces do have an agenda. Like, public performances of racism are about seeking complicity. It is about silencing other groups. Like, it's not – the internet just didn't happen to, like, break down that way. It's that it was a cultivated space to desensitize people to those words, but then also introduce like sort of an implicit racism in a lot of online discourse. And so this idea that like, oh, that's just how, you know, we talk online. Yeah, that's a carefully crafted environment in some ways by repeated shibboleths put out there by various like forms of racist, right? Yeah. And so that's the other thing that bothers me is I think a lot of people...
it cures those spaces, right? Like, that's the thing it does is it makes those spaces, you know, impenetrable for marginalized groups. It is a signal that says you are not welcome here as you are. If you want to be welcome here, then, like, you need to play along. And those things happen from top to bottom in culture, right? Like, this is like me in high school being told that I'm one of the good ones by the pitcher on the high school baseball team, right? And like, okay, if I get upset about this, I have to leave this party, right? Where I have other friends because I know he's like higher on the weird hierarchical totem pole here.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
It is the same thing that happens whenever, you know, black folks go on TV and, like, have to, like, fucking code switch and be in a very specific, like, I'm in talking head mode, you know, mode and move through that space in a way that is, like, I need to appeal to this audience, and it's the only way. Like, the system of insides and outsides is constructed not only through material things like access to wealth and opportunity, but also through this rhetorical, like, system of gating, Rob, that you're talking about. Like, frankly, like, this is one of the reasons why I love that Desus and Mero is a late-night TV show at this point. Because, like, those are two unapologetically people of color. Like, those dudes are like, representing the real culture that they grew up in the Bronx and, like, are... like, they're able to present that side of themselves on TV, which helps desegregate television as a space. And thankfully, I think there are lots of people who are doing that inside of gaming culture. I think with the Spawn on Me crew, like, who just, like, is so good and so real. If you need more, like, black folks in your life, go listen to Spawn on Me, please. And let me tell you another thing. You need more black folks in your life, the same way that you need more women in your life. Kotaku just launched Fave This. Patricia Hernandez and Gita Jackson.
Two women of color.
Two queer women of color. Doing a podcast. Shout out to them. Disclosure.
Disclosure, again, one of them is my life partner.
Right. That's
and the
all.
Other is my and good friend. So.
Shout out to Polygon, who has they're the Polygon show, which is hosted by four women. Like it is so important to break out of the like three white dudes box when it comes to podcasts, when it comes to YouTube culture. Like it is obviously a thing here that I'm doing my best to do when we build the team here is to bring in perspectives that are not the default perspective and shake that up a little bit. But as a consumer, you also need to take that step and like go listen to voices that are not the ones that you hear everywhere else. It will help you a lot in situations like these because suddenly you will have heard those stories. Everyone in the margins has a you're one of the good ones story of some sort, has a like they threw eggs at me story, has a they came after me with baseball bats because I was walking with a white girl story. Like everyone has those stories. You just moved.
I was going to say, yeah. I had the first two,
uh-huh.
Did not have the last one.
Last one was let me tell you.
That doesn't sound good at all.
We weren't even dating is the thing. It was very weird.
God.
Anyway, it has been, I think this has been a really difficult thing. I'm curious what you guys think of the DMCA takedown stuff from Campo with Firewatch and those videos.
I think it's the one weapon you have as a game developer, right? Actually sort of contain, you know, like sort mm-hmm. of roping off that avenue for a particular, you know,
right.
YouTuber is like, that's kind of the one thing you can do at this point, right? When it comes to what you're presented
as. There are like a couple of other things you could.
Okay.
They could have monetized the video. They could have like monetized the video themselves. They could have done things that are not DMCA takedowns. They could have just like, I think I would have done
DMCA takedown is the nuclear button.
Yes.
In a way
gotcha.
That,
yes. It's the most powerful message they could send.
And I don't necessarily like, you know, in my heart you sort of like disagree with
yep.
why they chose to do what they did. In my head, I think it sends a complicated signal to a lot of people that is not that you can't walk it back. I actually expect them to maybe walk it back in some fashion, if only rhetorically at some point. I don't necessarily expect them to revoke the DMCA strike, but like on their website, it says anything can be monetized based on
yep.
Firewatch. Like they're one of the developers that explicitly tries to get in front of the legal gray area. Like people should know there is no
yes.
legal precedent for streaming.
Right,
there's no legal precedent for like fair use is something the video game industry looks away from,
yes.
but it's not explicitly been defended as legal precedent.
Ever.
There is at
so
some point
launched,
it will happen.
When we launched Waypoint with the 72-hour live stream, like we had a lot of meetings, like pull back the curtain all the way. We had a lot of meetings with legal who was like, I understand that this is like what happens in this industry, but it's not legal. Like streaming video games and you speaking over it, you don't own that audiovisual content. It's not legal. Go get like we straight up had lawyers say you have to go get things signed saying you can stream games until we feel comfortable enough that this is industry kind of the industry standard at least and is low risk. Like
and there were certain unnamed Japanese companies that when we approached them for, hey, could we get our lawyers to talk to your lawyers? And they said, if you really want our Japanese lawyers to talk to your
yes.
lawyers,
they, like,
what you're
going to
find,
basically.
Yeah. They're like, what you're going to find out is that this doesn't fly legally and that, like, internally we just find ways to turn a blind eye so that people can
yes.
do, like, the rationalization is that it benefits all involved, which I agree with that. I think holistically, like, it's a net positive for everyone across the board, but that is not legally defensible. Legally, publishers, especially in YouTube, where you are a publishing on a platform that is deferential to copyright holders in all
yep.
manners of when this has come up, from the legal work that I've done looking into this, like Campo Santo is legally of the right to offer a license, carte blanche to anyone, but is allowed to revoke those licenses on an individual basis. And so
yep.
they can say to PewDiePie, we have revoked your individual license while still allowing carte blanche for anyone to quote unquote monetize videos, but they are well within their right from the like the current readings of things to take the actions they did. The only question is whether does that send sort of a chilling sort of
yep.
Effect on people that do that for a living.
But the thing is, like, again, sometimes I feel like these conversations about broader principles kind of obscure the issue at hand a little bit. Like, yeah, there are slippery slopes. There are things to watch out for here. But I also think, like, you know what? In the case of, like, the guy's throwing the N-word around on his streams, right. And then 100%. There's your brand and right. his gay and, you know, his face all over it. I think you're within your right to be like, you know what? Just go to hell. Well, like, again, don't do that shit.
The thing that's interesting for me is, one, this isn't the first time that the DMCA thing has happened this year. It's just the first time that it's happened for reasons of what is inside the content, right? Like Persona or Atlas Japan made the statement back in also the beginning of the year around January, February that said you're not allowed to stream past X point. Right. Today, right?
I just got an email for a Japanese video game from a non-Atlas company that said you cannot stream past the first chapter. And it explicitly, like Atlas said, you may be subject to DMCA YouTube strikes and takedowns. This thing said explicitly, if you stream or put up videos past the first chapter, you will be issued a takedown notice on YouTube and Twitch.
Which, again, is on the back of the thing that you said before, which is that platforms like YouTube and Twitch will defer immediately to publishers. I'm actually not sure how that changes depending on the size of the publisher or whatever, but like I do know that like
the ones that have money and could cost YouTube money, they're going to defer.
They are going to defer.
I would sure rather have the case where a developer is like, no, you said the N-word, fuck off, then, oh, you know, we've got a lot of money, so don't make us mad.
To me, it actually gestures towards other things, which are like the strength of IP law in America in terms of it being an avenue for corporate action or for creator action, does show that there are not many other avenues for legal action around this. There are no like major hate speech laws on the books in America. I think a lot of people say a lot is like, oh, well, if it's hate speech is the only type of speech not protected under the First Amendment. Like, no. It's 100% protected under the First Amendment. We don't have hate speech law, federal hate speech laws on the books. So there isn't another avenue by which, Campo Santo could take a civil case against PewDiePie or something and say, we want the money that you got from that to be diverted to a charity. Like that is not I guess they could do that civil case under some other thing, but like that they're not under any sort of hate speech law.
Yeah, absolutely not.
Go ahead, Rob.
Just the other thing I want to mention, because we got an email about this not long ago regarding Valve. The other thing to remember here, a lot of these platform holders have clearly abdicated the responsibility for policing any kind of hate speech or bigotry on their platforms. They've they're sort of content agnostic in a really self-serving way. And so it's, the only way these things get sort of addressed is if the IP rights holder who has the actual leverage and these are the only thing that a lot of platform holders care about starts to exert that influence, because at no point will the platform itself try to address the, problems festering, whether it's the Steam forums, whether it's, YouTube's booming hate speech economy, or Twitch's harassment problem. Like, they're all going to duck that.
Yep. It has been a wild couple of days around this, around race, around games. Someone in the chat said, boy, those South Park boys really ducked one.
Oh,
on this
God.
How is this whole podcast not about that?
I know. It's unbelievable. I'll just speak to that like super, 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 super briefly, which is like the thing that for people who don't know, the new South Park game that's coming out.
Fractured Butthole.
The Fractured, Butthole.
It still got it.
Includes a difficulty slider that is also your race slider. It doesn't change combat difficulty, but it changes how NPCs will talk to you. It changes the dialogue. Presumably, it will change some quest lines or something like that. And here is my entire take. One, I don't trust the South Park team to handle this well after years of their show mishandling race. Two, consider being a black person who lives through this shit every day and like comes home and is like, man, I really love lukewarm centrist takes. I'm going to boot up the South Park game real quick. I'm like, so I just need a break.
We all know these people.
We do. But listen, real talk, I know black people who love South Park. So like that person exists. And I sit down like, oh, I'm going to make like a little South Park me. Oh, fuck. This game is not for like this. I'm gonna feel like shit again in this game. Who knows what their execution is? I think they're setting a very high bar to clear that I don't have much faith in them clearing. And I think that like while I do want games to tackle race directly heads on, I just don't have the confidence that they'll pull it off. And also like it would be cool to also play in a world in which, you know, being black is not always the fucking worst.
A dire thing. I personally think the tiniest bit of progress, it's a tiniest bit of a good sign that 10 years ago we would absolutely, right. not necessarily you and me, but like the games press in general would be, or the blogosphere in general would be like, wow, look at how woke this is, blah, blah, blah. and now, like, it feels like, no, people are looking into things a tiny bit deeper. So that gave me like the tiniest feeling of heartening, like that, okay, we've at least made the tiniest baby step away from this.
The woke gamer is definitely the woke here gamer, I'm saying. For the fractured butthole, right?
Yeah, well, that's all woke
the
gamers.
Woke gamer is already writing his top
woke gamer
10.
Actually suggested that.
Oh, woke gamer
via Twitter,
all the dev team.
Via Twitter to Ubisoft. also added a link to his Patreon.
Yes.
Said, hey, if you like this idea, hire me to consult.
Me, the woke gamer.
Me.
I think it's going to do it for us today. We are out of time. Someone else needs to use this room. We've pushed it a little far as it is. I'm Austin Walker. You can find me on Twitter at Austin Walker. Nope, at Austin underscore Walker. Underscore. Nope, underscore. There it is. That's the right emphasis. Walker. Danielle Riendo, where can people find you?
You can find me at Danielle RI on Twitter. And also, huge shout out to the mods who are working their, butts,
working their butts off
in this
in the chat
right
today.
Now. So thank you, mods.
Mwah, shout outs. Patrick Klepek, what about you?
You can find me at Patrick Klubik. A brief aside, because we're out of time, but I'm well aware, as a result of this incident, there was something not quite this extreme, but something that happened at Giant Bomb, in which a word was uttered, and we dealt with our own experience. I will separately address that, if not in the article I'm writing, then on Twitter. But I think they're pretty different scenarios for some pretty specific reasons, but I wanted to at least acknowledge that, like, I'm aware, like, that you can't
you can
talk
stop,
about this.
You can stop
thinking,
tweeting it at you.
I'm like, eight of you have, like, 20 DMs that are like, but what about that thing? I'm like, I know. So I'll get to it.
It'll be addressed.
And it's at Patrick Klepek on Twitter. Rob Zachney, where are you at?
You're not going to find me on the internet this week. You'll find me hiding in the woods of New England, enjoying those crisp autumn leaves.
You want to play some Destiny this week? You all
I sure do. I sure do.
All right, everybody. That's going to do it for us. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at Waypoint, Facebook at Waypoint Vice, YouTube.com/Waypoint Vice, and right here at Twitch.tv/Waypoint. Shout-outs to Rob Schulte for editing this one for us, and shout-outs to Bowen for letting us use his track Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. You can find out more about that at waypoint.zone/BOEN. What do we say to him, Danielle?
Be good and be good at it.
Peace.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.